Welcome to another edition of After the Buzzer. Mike Gross from the headquarters alongside Gordy Jones. And hoops is coming. NBA hoops is coming fast. The Sixers are coming fast. Ben Simmons, is he coming fast? I don't know. But we're going to talk about Sixers. And we have a guest who is overqualified to do that. He is Derek Bodner, who covers the team for the Athletic. I always want to say the Athletic is the Atlantic, and they're not close to each other. They're no. Anyway, Derek, welcome to the big show. And if you're not tired of talking about Ben Simmons by the end of this broadcast, you will be.
Well, I am happy to be here regardless of what we are talking about.
I appreciate that. Is it really true, as I have read, that when Simmons showed up for practice, the Sixers were surprised to see him show up?
Well, certainly the report was that he showed up at the Wells Fargo Center on Monday night, just before tip-off of their game against the Brooklyn Nets.
Right.
The Sixers had no idea he was showing up for that. They didn't know until he was at the arena and somebody texted Elton Brand to let Ben Simmons in the door. It is not something I think I've ever seen go down like that. But he is here. I saw him with my own eye today. It is true.
Wow, there's been a sighting. Bigfoot-esque sighting. It's almost too broad to say how does he fit in, but is he ready to play? What's your sense of where they are with him and where he is with them?
Yeah, I mean, everyone will tell you that you can be in as tip-top shape as you can try to be, but until you actually play basketball, it is different. And I think there is some truth to that. Now, whether or not that means that Ben will be ready to go on Wednesday or he might take another week, who knows? For all the criticism of Ben Simmons, he does keep himself in really good shape. He's been dedicated in that regard. And it's not like much has really changed. You know, all they changed on the team is they upgraded Mike Scott to George Niang and upgraded Dwight Howard to Andre Drummond, so the pieces should mostly fit the exact same way they fit last year, with some tweaks from Doc to improve upon. But I think he should be able to hit the ground running pretty quickly. The question is whether or not he's going to be dedicated enough to be anywhere near the player he was in last year's regular season. But scheme-wise, conditioning-wise, I think that should be ready to go pretty early on here.
So the video I saw of him practicing today, he had sweats on and his cell phone in his pocket. And the final huddle, he wanted no part of the huddle and he just sort of turned around and walked off. I mean, the optics of this, they very much remind me of Terrell Owens in 2005. But what was your take on what you saw today?
Well, he didn't do any sit-ups. I think you're it's not like, the access we get at practice, we get 10 minutes. You probably saw mostly what we saw. I don't think there was too much else to really glean, but I would agree with you, he didn't look entirely engaged. Mm-hmm. You know, Ben is a lot of times tough to read because he is very closed off. He doesn't show a lot of emotion. He doesn't express a lot of emotion. Yeah. But this would be, of a guy who is pretty stoic in nature most of the time, this is even more disengaged.
Right.
And certainly, I hate reading too much into body language. The sweats with the cell phone in the pocket isn't the greatest look. The not being willing to walk over and be involved in the huddle, he was basically dribbling the basketball off to the side while the rest of the team had their hands together in a huddle.
Mm-hmm.
Not the greatest look. We are, over nitpicking and over processing a couple of minutes of what was probably a multi-hour practice. But from what we saw, there's reason for concern for sure.
So how do you envision this unfolding? I mean, Doc Rivers said that when he's in shape, he's going to play. And, if you look at it, if you step back and say, well, it would behoove Ben to play well because then he'll get what he wants. And the Sixers will also get what they want, a better return on him. But it just off that little snippet, doesn't look like that's how this is going to unfold. But I'd be interested in seeing and hearing what your perspective is on that.
In order for Ben to get what he wants, I think he needs the best way for him to get off of the team, if that is his goal, and by all accounts it is for him to come in and be a giant pain in the you-know-what, and be a distraction, be only half there. We saw James Harden do it last year, where he came in out of shape and was a distraction. We saw three years ago with Jimmy Butler. That Ben doesn't have the personality to to be as directly confrontational as Jimmy Butler does. Jimmy Butler thrives in that. Ben Simmons, by all accounts, almost completely avoids that.
Right.
But I think the best way for him to get off the team would be to be more confrontational than is maybe in his nature.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's necessarily how it's going to play out. I think it'll be a lot more passive-aggressive,
mm-hmm.
Half-hearted, mm-hmm. sort of like playing like the way he did at LSU when he was there back in college. You know, I think, and if that happens, I think we're in for a couple of months here. I don't think he's going to be moved before December 15th when a large portion of the league can be traded. I think it could even drag out closer to the trade deadline when more teams are willing to make a major move. And I think he's probably read that writing on the wall, too. I think that's why he's here and he stopped his holdout. And how long can you put on a pouty face? I guess we'll find out.
Wow, what a way to launch into the NBA season.
Hit the ground crawling.
You know, the difference, though, is that some people wanted James Harden to play basketball on their team, and some people wanted Jimmy Butler to play basketball on their team. I don't think anybody wants Ben Simmons to play basketball on their team. Is that right?
Well, I mean, certainly there is a massive difference between James Harden and Ben Simmons. And about the trade value, you know, at the end of the day, James Harden can dog it as much as he wants. GMs know what they're getting in him, and they know that he would make them a contender. With Ben Simmons, I think there are still teams interested, but the kind of teams that would be interested, you know, Sixers are a little bit unique in where they are. Most teams trading away an all-star or better player because the all-star wants out are going into a rebuild. And they can trade two teams like, you know, Minnesota, who would offer you a bunch of draft picks and young players. Most teams aren't like the Sixers where we're trading an all-star. And by the way, we're still trying to contend.
Yeah.
And not only that, but you're trading the all-star that's maybe the most polarizing with his very unique strengths and weaknesses in the entire league.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot, you know, this is like James Harden is a plug and play. He could, because he was so good and because he only had a year and a half left on his contract, he could dictate where he wanted to go, irrespective of how much effort he gave or how he looked in the early parts of the season.
Right.
Ben Simmons certainly can't do that. I think that's where there needs to be a little bit of acknowledgement from him. And that, look, I want to go somewhere, have my own team, get away from Philly.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, fine. You've got to realize that's a little tougher of a task than I think he maybe gave it credit for originally.
Yeah, and maybe showing up unannounced is maybe a tiny acknowledgement of that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the team in general. Who's going to, I think Maxey is an interesting piece. I mean, who's going to maybe come to the fore if Simmons is a less important figure in terms of the Sixers' actual basketball team? Who's going to come to the fore, do you think, on the current roster?
Yeah, well, I think Maxey was going to have a much bigger role,
regardless
of whether or not Ben was there, because they really need that player who can create off the dribble, get in the paint, come off of a pick and roll, and do something. And Maxey was showing signs of that last year. You know, he basically won them Game 6 to force a Game 7 there with his play in the second half. So I think he was going to assume a bigger role anyway. You know, when you're starting off the season, Matisse Thybulle has had an injured shoulder. He hasn't been playing much in the preseason. He did practice these past 2 days. I think he's going to be good to go. But his minutes might be down because he's still getting up to speed. Shake Milton is still injured, and he looks like going to be out of action here for a little bit at least.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one guy outside of Tyrese Maxey, who you could see play a little more than you expect, I think is probably going to be Isaiah Joe. Mm-hmm. I think he has earned a spot in the rotation. They certainly need his shooting, and that's whether Simmons plays or doesn't play. They will always need that J.J. Redick, that Landry Shamet type who has, you know, the defense, the respect of the defense. And I think Isaiah Joe has a chance to do that. He has very deep range, a very quick release on his shot, and has just been shooting the heck out of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think, look, he weighs, they claim he weighs 175 pounds. I don't believe that for a second. At his weight, be able to play 30 minutes right now. But I think you could see him step in 15 minutes and give you something off the bench. I think he might benefit a little bit from a more depleted guard rotation than maybe you expected.
So this is something you retweeted today from your colleague, Rich Hoffman, who quoted Tobias Harris about the vibe at practice. And Tobias said sarcastically, no, it was perfectly fine. And then his longer answer was, we got an open
opening to our season coming up. Truth be told, that's honestly where our focus is. We're grown men here. This is not middle school, 7th grade, 8th grade. Oh, you did this to me, you did that. Nah, as soon as we step on that floor, it's just basketball, and honestly, that's the way it should be. We're here for one thing, that's to be the best team we can be and compete, get better as a group. So all the energy and this or that, the vibe was what it was. Was it perfect? No. But we're here to do a job, and that's to win basketball games. So put our big boy pants on the floor, and we get on the floor and do what we do.
It's easy to say, hard to do, though. I mean, what was your take on Tobias's take?
Yeah, I think Tobias is a professional and he's going to come in, and I think deep down he believes that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of them know that they can win a lot of games, get to the trade deadline, and maybe get the final version of this team, and mm-hmm. I think they believe they can make a run for a mm-hmm. championship. The questions are going to come, like, if they hit a 3-game losing streak, or if they get, you know, figuratively punched in the mouth, or if there's any kind of adversity, is that when all of this tension starts to build up? I think it's a risk.
Yeah.
When you have Joel Embiid, who just 3 weeks ago said that, you know, he thought what Ben was doing was disrespectful. Look, I think Joel's going to come in and be a professional, but like I said, if things start going sideways, mm-hmm. is that when all of this tension? I think there is a little bit of tension. Call it tension, call it uncertainty, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly not the cleanest vibe. An overused word that sticks around the Sixers. It's not the cleanest vibe in the world, I think that's fair to say.
So, speaking of Joe, the interview he gave, it's a few weeks ago now, or I guess Ben said that he couldn't play with him, that their styles didn't mesh. And Joe came back and said, well, we've bent over backwards to accommodate this guy. And that seems like a kind of a thing that would be hard to get beyond because, you know, yeah, maybe you can play with each other if that's not out there. But it's now it's out there. And now they've made their feelings known about how they feel about playing with one. That seems like that would be kind of tough to get beyond. What was your feelings about that whole back and forth?
Yeah, and Embiid has a way of saying, like, maybe being a little, like, 10% too truthful for his own good. One of those instances where he definitely did.
Yeah.
And I think everybody sort of recognizes that, look, they, you know, there was a Ben Simmons wanted to be a point guard. He wanted the ball in his hands. Because of that, you built a team a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You end up going out there, letting Jimmy Butler walk. You bring in Al Horford. And Al was a good fit alongside Ben Simmons when Joel Embiid went to the bench.
Mm-hmm.
But it hurt Embiid when he was on the floor because those two didn't mesh all that well. And I think these are all beliefs that Embiid has had sort of like bottled up. And now it's just like, well, if you're going to disrespect us like this.
Yeah.
Embiid almost can't help himself. Look, again, I think Embiid, and really when we talk about like the feel of the locker room and mm-hmm. teammate buy-in, you're really talking about Embiid. If Embiid is okay, everyone else sort of falls in line.
Right.
I think Joel Embiid is going to be a professional. But where you bring up, you know, can you sort of come back from those comments? To me, it's much more is, well, what happens if the small chance, whatever the chance is, that Ben is still on the team after the trade deadline?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I go, all right, well, look, all this stuff has been said.
Mm-hmm.
Can you actually come back from that? I think they can be professional here for the next 2 to 3 months to get a trade. To me, it's if it turns into a longer-term
mm-hmm.
relationship, I think that would be tough to walk back from.
Yeah.
There's so many things about this situation that are unique. And one of them, I think, Jordy, you guys just hit on it, is that a lot of stuff that's probably we don't know about and is behind closed doors in so many other cases is sort of out in the open right now. Do you think the Sixers have screwed this up in any way? I've seen some things on Twitter, not that I care about that, but, you know, where this notion that the Sixers threw Simmons under the bus. Is there anything the Sixers can be blamed for here?
Yeah, you know, I think certainly Doc's comments, you know, he was at the end of the season, whether or not he thought Ben could be a point guard on a championship team, and he said, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That was a misstep, for sure. You know, Joel Embiid's comments, he was basically asked, what was the turning point in Game 7? And mm-hmm. he said, when we had an open dunk and got 1 point out of it, probably didn't help. But I don't think that's the key reason that we're here. You know, I think a much bigger aspect of why we're here was the James Harden trade rumors mm-hmm. last winter. And you know, that's sort of like the risk that you run when you put an all-star caliber player in a trade rumor, is that if that doesn't go through, you know, and this is maybe the one aspect of Ben's request that I get the most, why would he want to, because even if Ben Simmons didn't request a trade this summer, I think Daryl Morey was eventually going to trade him. Daryl Morey is always going to be pursuing those superstar players.
Right.
One way the Sixers have to pursue that is by dangling Ben Simmons. I think Ben and his team, you know, read the writing on the wall and said, look, if you're going to eventually trade us, like, let's go out on our own terms. Maybe Morey could have done a better job of keeping those trade discussions under wrap. You know, I do think that was, that getting out there impacted where we are right now. By and large, you know, it's not like he was shocked. Like, they were in trade discussions for James Harden. You had to pursue that. I don't blame the Sixers too much. I blame Ben, certainly, with his lack of development, much more.
See, the other thing I wonder about, and this is, I don't know how big a part of it is, but it is certainly a part of it, is just how the fans are going to respond to him. As we know, they open at New Orleans on Wednesday, then Friday against Brooklyn. I mean, how do you play in your own arena when the fans hate you? You know, you know what I mean?
I can't even imagine what that environment's going to be like. And there's part of me that wonders, all right, maybe you bring him in, because you don't want to bring him on opening night, just because it's a big stage. Maybe you don't want to bring him back against Brooklyn on national TV game at the Wells Fargo Center.
Right.
Maybe he opens up the season in Oklahoma City in their third game. When nobody's going to, but like, then you come back home, and like seven of your next 10 games or whatever are in the Wells Fargo. Like, you can't avoid this forever.
Right.
You know, it is going to be very uncomfortable for Ben, I'm sure. And I don't know if I've ever seen a hometown player who's going to be booed like Ben is going to be booed.
Interesting.
I mean, I don't know how long that will last for. I don't know how Ben will respond. I mean, Ben is he hears stuff like that. He will claim he doesn't.
Yeah.
But if he had the confidence to play through that, he would have attempted in-game jumpers at some point over the last 5 years.
It'll be
certainly a factor.
I heard Brian Windhorst talking about this. Apparently, several years ago, when Windhorst was still covering the Cavaliers, Anderson Varejao had some sort of, I think it was a holdout or something. And so whoever was coaching the Cavaliers at the time decided that he was going to insert him with LeBron so that they couldn't boo him. I thought that was kind of an interesting way, because for some reason it was a weird situation where LeBron was coming off the bench or something like that, for some reason coming off an injury, so he inserted them both at the same time so they couldn't necessarily boo Anderson Varejao. So there's a possibility, right?
Yeah, just bring him in with Embiid every time.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
It doesn't seem workable. I'm scoffing a little bit at that. So how do you, Derek, how do you like the basketball team? Let's go big here, big picture a little bit. Broaden the lens a little bit. How do you like the Sixers within the hierarchy of the East, and remembering that they had the best record and were the number one seed out of the East a year ago with, 49 wins, I think? Anyway.
It's tough because I have no idea what the team is going to look like. I have no idea if Ben Simmons is going to play. I have no idea how much effort he's going to give you. I have no idea how to handicap pretty much anything else going on with this team right now.
That's right.
In terms of where they fit in the East, I certainly think the Nets, even with Kyrie not playing, and the Bucks are better. I think the Celtics and the Heat could certainly be better, and you can even throw Atlanta in there, although I think Atlanta might run into a little bit of, you know, the weight of expectations. So I think it'll be tough for the Sixers. Look, if Ben Simmons was going to be here all year and he was going to be the normal regular season Ben Simmons, I could see them fighting for a 3 or 4 seed, but I could also see this team right now with so much uncertainty. Maybe Ben doesn't play all the time. Maybe when he does play, he's giving 50% effort. They make a trade at some point. I could see this team ending up with a 5-6 seed. I could see them falling down in the East. I don't know. It's one of the weirdest I start saying that, and I remember all the weird seasons that the team has had, and all the weird circumstances. But this is a unique one for sure.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. It's like you've covered the team since 2009 for one outlet or another, and it's as much as any other team, they're as interesting off the court as they are on it. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
We were having this conversation today. If you had to pick any team in the league, not counting ones that have won championships, because obviously that presents a whole different way to cover, mm-hmm. but of non-championship teams, mm-hmm. this has to be the most entertaining team in the league. Like, the best team to cover, because there's always, whether it's GMs running burner accounts, or whether there's, you know, commissioners bringing in Colangelo's, like, there's always something to talk about. Always.
It's
always.
True. You mentioned Doc Rivers' quotes after Game 7 against Atlanta last year, and he tried to walk those back. What do you think that does to his credibility, well, for people like us, first of all, and also within the locker room? What do you think that does to that sort of – because he's always sort of had a reputation as a straight shooter, and that just – to me, he didn't wear that all that well. But I'd be interested in your take.
Yeah, no, he basically tried to say, like, hey, you guys are making stuff up. It's not mm-hmm. what I said. Go back and play a tape. And then he played a tape, and that's almost quite literally what he said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the locker room, I don't think that will hurt him at mm-hmm. all. And I think that's a calculation he's making, is that,
sure. Yeah,
the media is going to know that I'm yeah. lying, but that's much smaller of an impact than having an annoyed mm-hmm. Ben Simmons and Rich Paul.
Mm-hmm.
But my problem is, okay, if you want to lie to us, like, that's fine, that's part of the job, I guess, in some respect. But, like, Ben Simmons has the internet on his phone, he can go look up that press conference. Like, it's not like you can change what you said.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it was just, the surprising part was that there's just no way it was going to be effective. Like, everybody knows what you said. Like,
right.
Just own it. Say you misspoke. It didn't come out the way you wanted it to. I was surprised that he had that much time to think about how he was going to respond to it. And he basically just said, hey, I'm being misquoted.
Yeah, that was not a good look for him at all, I didn't think.
Uncharacteristic, no.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
So, well, let's wrap this up by saying, what team do you think he's most likely to wind up with? Let's just throw it out there. We've heard, I wrote this down, I'm probably missing some teams, but we've heard rumors of one degree or another, and granted the NBA is rife with rumors always. We've had him associated with Sacramento, Portland, Minnesota, Washington, San Antonio, Golden State, Cleveland, Indiana, and probably some teams that I'm forgetting. But where do you think the most likely landing spot is?
Well, you can at least we can cross one off the list. You can cross Indiana off the list because yeah. Brogdon just signed an extension. Of that extension, he can't be traded for the rest of the year. So we can cross him off the list.
That was the deal I liked the most, by the way. Of course.
I think the team where he makes the most sense on, and I think the team that has consistently had the most interest, is Minnesota.
Mm.
I think Minnesota has strong interest in him. I think he would fit in well next to Karl Anthony Towns.
Mm-hmm.
I think they want to show improvement with the new ownership and make a playoff push. And I think for all of Ben Simmons' faults, I think he will raise the team's floor pretty substantially. He will get them closer towards playoff contention. The problem is they don't really have what the Sixers want. And that goes back to that problem that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Where the Sixers are in a unique spot for a team trying to trade an all-star caliber player like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they need to get a third team involved.
Mm-hmm.
So I think until that happens, it's a non-starter and a trade won't happen. But I do think because they are the team that has the most consistent interest in him, and because they are the team that I think Ben would make the most sense on,
mm-hmm.
I think Simmons will probably end up, if I had to guess, most likely team,
mm-hmm.
he ends up on Minnesota. The question is, what's the third team going to be, and what's
right.
coming back to the Sixers?
Yeah, that is a big deal, and they just don't really. And maybe they could trade him for Joel's close personal friend Karl Anthony Towns.
No. I'm guessing Minnesota is probably not looking to do that.
I'm guessing that's not going to.
I could have fielded that one for you,
Derek. Could you imagine though, if Joel Embiid was on a team with Towns and Drummond, it would be like all of his enemies on one team.
I know. I was trying to think of some of the other. Who else is he? Oh, Marcus Smart. They could trade for him too.
Maybe get Hassan Whiteside.
Yes.
No,
yes. Get the whole band together. It'd be like it'd be like the Jailblazers of back in the day.
Well, we tried to broaden the lens from Ben Simmons. We couldn't do it. It's just the way it is. Hey, Derek. Thanks so much, man. We appreciate it. And
I'm interested to see what you come up with next on this story, this endless ongoing story of covering this team.
Yes.
Nice work. We're glad to have you. We'll be happy to have you again. Go cover some Sixers, man.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Anytime.
All right. Thanks, Derek. Take care. Be well.
Yep.
So, Mike, that was obviously an interesting perspective from Derek. He's been immersed in this for over a decade now for one outlet or another. So, but, and he's right. It's like, it's hard to really figure the Sixers until you figure out who's actually going to be playing for them. And that, and to me, the whole, like I said, the vibe today, it just reminded me so much of T.O., where I'm going to come in and I'm going to be the biggest pain in the ass I can possibly be. And this is not going to turn out well for you. Just trade me for pennies on the dollar, but get me out of here.
What are the agents telling him?
Oh, to do just that, probably.
That's probably right. But is that smart?
I don't know. I mean, the interesting thing to me is always how that never really comes back and burns you. Like, look at James Harden last year. It's like it didn't really stick to him in any meaningful way.
Yeah, but again, he is perceived as one of the best players on the planet.
Fair.
Ben Simmons has got to be perceived as a mess by everybody else in the league right now.
I would think.
That's the thing that if you have any self-awareness, if you're Ben Simmons or the people talking to him...
Mm-hmm.
You have to be aware of that.
Is he aware or is he just believing, you know, the last thing that Rich Paul told him?
So, and Rich Paul is a smart guy, right?
Quite. So this is interesting. This is sort of a sidelight to this whole thing. You know, Simmons, to me, I've said this before in this forum, how I always think he's very conscious of his branding. That's a big part of it. But a guy like that, you would think, wouldn't necessarily be the kind of player he is, where he plays hard all the time, which I really appreciate about him.
He plays with physical effort all
the time. Yeah, usually you would think a guy like that would just be concerned about his numbers. But to me, he does make winning plays, but he also has that glaring flaw that we've seen again and again.
And the glaring flaw makes him uncomfortable, so he's just going to push it away.
Yes.
He's not going to address it. He's just going to push it aside, and it's that doesn't fly.
And it's come up in the playoffs again and again, and obviously it came down in the final minutes of the Atlanta game, Game 7, where that was like that was it. That was the straw that broke everybody's backs. So I don't know how this turns out, but I guess if I had to guess, I think Simmons is more likely to get his way than the Sixers are, that the Sixers are going to end up like with a pennies on the dollar kind of situation. And as Derek mentioned, my favorite trade, the one to Indiana for Brogdon and or LeVert or whatever, that's not going to happen because Brogdon just signed an extension today, and that means he can't be traded this year.
Yeah. So. And the other thing is, it probably, for it to work out decently for the Sixers, is probably going to involve a third team now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you get, where your brain explodes. You just can't. Like, how can you even predict what that would entail?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're just stuck with...
We're stuck with conjecture and Ben Simmons moping around. And, one last T.O. comparison. Eventually, mid-season 2005, you know, he was moping around because... Well, there are all kinds of things that were going on. He wouldn't talk to the media. He wouldn't even talk to his coaches. The only coach he would talk to was David Culley, who was the receivers coach. He got in a fight with Hugh Douglas, who was the team ambassador, whatever that means.
What happened to him, by the way?
I don't know.
Yeah. Sorry. But
mid-season, they suspended him, which I could see that happening in this case, too.
Yeah.
That it's like, we don't want you around us anymore. Just go away, you know.
Yeah,
I could see that happening.
Boy, that's obviously not good for anybody, and T.O. ended up having a pretty good rest of his career.
Yeah,
it turned out okay. It's harder to see this turning out okay. I don't know.
Yeah, it's an ugly piece of business. So we wanted to we wanted to transition from there to another piece of business that's sort of conjectural.
Yeah,
and that would be James Franklin, as we know earlier this year, he's been sort of linked with, you know, the USC opening that's going to occur at the end of this season. And now
Ed Orgeron, the coach at LSU, is going to be out at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And that's another possible landing spot. And you, our friend Mike Poorman wrote about this for statecollege.com. And what was your feeling about what Mike wrote?
Well, Mike, it just sort of ran down the history of this and who's involved and you know, there's a couple things. You know, Penn State's athletic director, her contract runs out pretty soon. The university president's contract runs out pretty soon. This could be a pretty seismic shift, I mean, this is really conjecture, but would Sandy Barber think, well, hey, I got one more year. I want to hire a football coach before I get out of here. You know, they supposedly that's how ADs think sometimes. I don't know. You know, as soon as I heard that Ed Orgeron was being pushed out the door at LSU, 2 years after winning, I mean, not even 2 years, the middle of the second season after winning the national championship with which, at the time, there were people saying, is this the best college team ever? Or is this one of the best?
It was certainly one of the best offenses ever. It certainly was.
And you know, it's now perceived that the guy who was not even the quarterback coach, passing game coordinator, Joe Brady, immediately parlayed that into a coordinator's job in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So I think it's widely perceived that he kind of unlocked Burrow and made that happen, and Orgeron didn't have that much to do with it. And also, there's, if you read into the Orgeron story, there's some stuff going on there with him off the field. That's, you know, I don't know. But anyway, when I heard that, the first thing I thought was, well, James Franklin's going to be in first in line for this job too. He's going to be the first because he coached in the SEC.
Yes, he did.
He coached a team that can't look what Vanderbilt has done since he left.
Not much.
And he won 9 games 2 years in a row, I believe, at Vanderbilt, and went to a bowl, 4 or 5 years in a row, went to a bowl at Vanderbilt in the SEC. So he's going to be talked about for that job, too. Who knows, you know, when the music stops, who knows where he's going to turn up. If he doesn't get USC, would he then want LSU? Yeah, you know, and there's a very good chance that in 2022, James Franklin is going to be making 8 figures salary a year wherever he is, with 3 outposts like LSU, USC, and Penn State, possibly all or certainly at least one of them interested in his services going forward.
Well, that will be very interesting to see. In my mind, I almost think of him more like an SEC guy than a Big Ten guy. Am I wrong to think that?
In the sense that everything is over the top in the SEC, and everything's over the top with him. I hear you. The whole I'm getting in my elevator. I'm getting in my helicopter and going recruiting, and just everything is. He's everybody has team captains. He has 8 team captains and a leader and a leadership council.
Of course.
So, you know, that's how he is. And I'm not even saying that entirely to make fun of him, but that's how he thinks. Let's just throw everything at it and see what works and what doesn't. And that's kind of is the SEC. And you see some of these places where you can see how bad it can go. Look at Tennessee. What a mess. And I don't know if you saw that.
I saw some of it.
They lost at home to Lane Kiffin, who was there for 1 year as the head coach and then went to USC. Totally bailed out him. So, of course, he comes back as the head coach of Mississippi, and they're throwing water bottles at him. Somebody hit him with a golf ball.
Yeah. And he caught one. He kind of did an Odell Beckham.
And then he threw his visor into the crowd. He's a pro wrestling villain. Link is on his WWE. So there's that. I almost think you could argue he's more he's more USC and more SEC than Big Ten.
that's just my you know, off the top of my head impression. I remember, I think this is something you wrote when he was at Vanderbilt. I forget what team they were playing, but he like told his team to look on the horizon because we're burning the boats.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was the reference to Cortez the Killer,
of course.
Yeah, where the Spanish army was invading some country, and they said, I think it was Cortez said, turn around, guys, the boats are burning. Like, you got to win. You got to win this battle right now,
right,
or there's no place to retreat to, right, unless you want to retreat to the ocean. But so yeah, he did that. That's happened. You can find that on YouTube. He made that speech to his team at halftime. It's funny because now he always says, I'm not much for speeches in the locker room.
I call bullshit.
Instead of burning the boats. The whole burning the boats thing. So, yeah, I mean, he's very highly regarded. I mean, let's face it. He's a guy that people want to hire. I hear all the time from readers who don't understand that. They don't think he's that great a coach, you know. But what he's done at Penn State, again, you have to go back to where they were 10 years ago, and then where they were when he got the job. Yeah. Although O'Brien did an excellent job.
I thought he was an amazing stopgap.
He did a tremendous job.
Yeah, he really did. Because he was really kind of doing it with bailing wire. And he was an interesting character in and
he
of
was,
himself.
He was, yeah. And we both got a little sense of him. Which was fun. It was fun to get a sense of him. I liked him a lot. But I don't think Franklin could have done what O'Brien did.
No.
I don't think O'Brien could do what Franklin has done in terms because so much of it is recruiting.
And he just did. O'Brien did not have the stomach for that.
He would have, and that's probably why he wanted to be back in the NFL, or at least a part of it. Yeah.
Although that hasn't gone well for him.
So. No, it has not. And now, of course, now he's back in college, and I even have seen some complaints from Alabama fans about him, about his play calling and stuff. Although, you know, they're rolling along pretty well now with a new quarterback, and you know they're averaging 45 points a game, so it's going okay.
It's,
I think, for Bill.
It's always a perspective thing with Alabama. I mean, they lost one game this year, so obviously the sky is falling.
Right. Here's what's interesting to me about this. I don't know. I can't imagine what Franklin says to his players about this.
That would be very interesting to know, because they're obviously very aware. I mean, you know, they have Twitter too.
You know, everybody kills Saban for lying about going leaving the NFL. But I almost wonder if lying isn't the most reasonable thing to do in this case.
It's like, how do you handle it? Yeah. There's no good way to do it.
There's no good way. I mean, if he says, he obviously can't say, yeah, I'm probably going to USC at the end of the year, guys. I want to know this week. Let's go. You know, that's not going to fly.
No.
He can't say, if he says, well, I'm not going to USC, I'm here, and then he goes to USC, well, then he's a liar and a fraud. And if he says, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. Well, that's probably 75-80% as bad as saying that.
I know.
I can't imagine how you handle this in a way that's, I don't want to say I can understand people lying, but I almost can. I mean, I don't know what you do.
You're kind of painted into a corner as far as what you can do. There's no great option to do it.
And the other thing about this particular moment is, I believe that a lot of this stuff is always driven by the coaches and their agents. They create it. Mm-hmm. In 2018, when there was a big flirtation with USC, I believe that was created by Franklin to, hey, maybe take a look at USC and see what you think. But if not, I can stick up Penn State for more money for my staff, more facilities money.
Which is actually kind of a good thing. You know?
Yeah. And probably more money for myself to redo my contract. But this was not created by him and his agent. It is a fact that USC fired their football coach and they're going to hire a new one.
Yeah.
It was kind of thrust upon him more than created by him and his agent.
I mean, if you're comparing jobs, I mean, LSU has been great over the years, but they're, but you know, I don't think they're USC. I think USC is a cut above. If you have your choice, I think that's where you go.
Yeah, I think it's US. I think of the three,
yeah.
Penn State, LSU, USC, is Penn State third?
I was going to say second, but you can make an argument.
I don't know. Here's something that I read this today. LSU has recruited at a top five level for a long time. I mean, really high level recruits. In fact, it has the general perception, with the exception of, remember, Les Miles won a national championship
there.
Yeah,
that's right.
And of course, Orgeron won one. And
Saban won one there.
And Saban won one. Yeah, that's three in recent memory with three different coaches. But other than those three national championships, that's a ridiculous half sentence there.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln.
The perception of LSU is, hey, you got all these NFL draft pick defensive guys and D-backs and wide receivers, and you can't win. And for a long time, they had those receivers and couldn't get them the ball.
Right.
And then, of course, with Brady and the 2 years ago, they figured that part of it out.
Oh, boy, did they ever.
Wow. I mean,
that was really fun to watch.
I mean, yeah, it was. I thought that was one of the best looking and best conceived and best executed offenses. I love throwing the ball over the middle of the field. They were so good at that. It was right here and carving people up. That was so impressive what they did. What was I saying? I completely lost my train of thought. LSU owns the state of Louisiana,
as they should,
which is not a bad thing. It's not Texas or California, but nobody really owns Texas and California to the extent that LSU owns Louisiana.
Yeah, and
so you might have a built-in base there where you can, and plus, I mean, nobody outspends them, nobody out-insanes them. you know, I mean, it's about a tie at the top of the SEC for who out-insanes who, but so.
How many teams are in the conference? That's the tie.
it's a multi-way tie. But they're not all spending the same. Like Auburn, as nuts as Auburn is, they don't spend at the level of Alabama, LSU, A&M.
Just can't.
Mississippi State. This is why I didn't
Kentucky
understand.
Cannot.
I didn't understand Moorhead's going there.
No.
I thought that was a mistake by him, as much as I like him, but because they're not. So I don't know. I guess we're. With James Franklin and Ben Simmons, we arrived at the same conclusion.
We don't know.
What the hell? We'll see what happens. Yeah, there you go. How's that? After the buzzer.
A very undefinitive after the buzzer this week.
Yes, we've done it. We pulled it off. We've concluded nothing. All right, gang, that's it. Take that and go with it.
Go with it. Whatever it was.
He's Gordy, and I'm Mike, and we are out of here. See you later.
Goodbye.